2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
Hey, everybody. JJ Cooper. Jeff Ponce back here again. Another prospect showdown roster analysis piece. Our ideal prospect showdown rosters. I say another one because if you're listening to this one, if you're listening to this podcast and you haven't listened to our coverage of our ideal American League prospect showdown rosters, I'd recommend listening to that one first. We'll explain it a little bit again here today, but this is part two of a two-part podcast series because we looked at all the AL teams and basically asked the question, what's the team? Who are the teams? What team would come out of each division if these teams all played? Who would survive? So we did that. And then we said, okay, now that we've said who's going to come out of the divisions, who'd be the wild card? And then we said at the end of that, who'd win it all? And we'll save the answer till later in the podcast on who won the American League. Or like you said, go back, listen to the AL one. But today we're going to look at the National League in the same way. We're going to look at all 15 rosters of, you can check them out at baseballamerica.com. These are our ideal prospect rosters. We're not predicting that these will be the rosters of the teams that actually play in the prospect showdown because there are some timing issues with that. Like if you have a pitcher who threw on Wednesday and you're set to go on Friday for your prospect showdown game, that guy stopped pitching probably if he's a starter, things like that. There are guys who are in big league camp who maybe their team decides not to send them down for the day to play as part of this prospect showdown game. But we're not looking at that. We're looking at what are the best teams of healthy. Let's note that. Like if a player's significantly injured, we're not going to make it. We're not going to pretend like that player can play. Because he can't, so you're not going to hear us talk about Nick Frosso for the Dodgers on this because Nick Frosso can't play in this game. He's not healthy right now. But Jeff, as we look at this, then we also have to also balance that stud prospect who played in the DSL last year versus that guy who's maybe not ranked as high on our top 30 for an org, but was in AAA last year. How do you balance that as you kind of were putting together some of these rosters?
Yeah, I think that I leaned heavily in terms of building the rosters on our rankings. I think ideally we want to have what we view as the top prospects on the field. But there were times where you did have to alter that a little bit if a team had, you know, four outfielders. I think the Rockies are a great example where, you know, Cole Carrick didn't make the roster. But is a really interesting prospect, but there's a shortstop that's ranked ahead of him, actually a couple, somebody that's going to be at second base that's ranked ahead of him. So like things sort of fall into a certain order that it's like, all right, well, maybe this team might have a couple of super utility type of guys like Benny Montgomery, another highly ranked outfielder, I think is the fourth ranked or fifth ranked outfielder if you include Cole Carrick in the Rockies system. And it's like, well, where does Benny Montgomery fit? Where I think with a lot of teams, Benny Montgomery would be a nice, you know, maybe not going to hit a ton, but a nice fit in center field of a guy who can defend and run and do a couple of things. So sometimes the depth can hurt you in a particular position group, especially if you have guys filling up the DH and don't have maybe a left field that's played some first base or something like that. So that made it a little bit tricky for sure. But I think by and large, I tried to stick with sort of in the order of the top tens of putting the best prospects out there. But sometimes you just couldn't do it, especially a catcher. Catcher, if you didn't have catching depth, like we talked about in the first show with Toronto, you may have to start a DSL guy or with the Astros, you know, somebody who's, you know, sort of an org guy with good defensive ability, you know.
And that's one of the things that I do think that does jump out about this is not just a recitation of our farm system talent rankings, because there are different teams that are grouped in very different ways. And when you see that, because of that, you end up having sometimes teams that may not be considered kind of maybe a middle of the pack farm system, or I'll take back to our AL list that the team that, that finished second in that was not the team that was, I believe, our second highest ranked AL team in our farm system talent rankings, but it was one that's very well balanced, because for this exercise, having a whole lot of outfielders, or like Jeff said, not having a catcher, not having a shortstop, whatever it is more impactful than it would be if you're just talking about farm system talent rankings. Because when we get to the Braves have a lot of pitching and very little hitting depth in their system. Okay, for what they need, that's fine. You know why? They're set at catcher, at first base, at second base, at shortstop, at third base, in right field, in center field, and maybe left field for the next like four or five years. They're good there. They need pitching. But for this exercise, that's not going to put you in a good spot. So I think that's a perfect way to segue into, let's jump in with the NL East. And when we say that, I think that there is a clear fifth. You know, when we look at how we line these teams up in the NL East, and Jeff, at least to me, I'm going to say that the Braves are the clear fifth. Do you agree or disagree?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that there's a clear fifth and a clear fourth in this one. But you look at the Braves lineup, and I put this together, so I can speak to it a little bit. There's a little bit of impact with like McCabe and Baldwin. They can't hit. Franklin can hit a little bit and, you know, has some minor league experience. Perdomo is probably their, you know, their top hitter here. And he's somebody who hasn't even played professionally yet. Nacho Alvarez is a solid hitter at number two, but I think it's, when you look at some of these lineups, Alvarez is more somebody that you'd want at like, you know, the sixth or seventh spot in your lineup and not necessarily two. And then the bottom of the order is pretty questionable. Finding a DH was kind of hard. I went with Doug Glow just because of he had the highest power grade and combination hit power at that point. So it gets really thin. And if you look at their top 30, it is like predominantly pitching. So they do have solid pitching. They have Smith-Shawver, Waldrip, Murphy, Schwellenbach, who have all had success in the minor leagues to some extent. And I think that is that's a true 1-2 punch there at the top. And Schwellenbach, I believe it actually closed in college, if I'm not mistaken. So, and,
hey, you might want him playing shortstop for this team as well, because he did that in college as well.
He has more experience against advanced competition stateside than Perdomo does. Like, that's the one thing I could throw out there. So, yeah, I mean, I think the pitching could maybe keep them in some games, but getting some runs out of this lineup, they're really going to have to get production out of Alvarez, McCabe, and Baldwin, I would think.
I feel like if you said that all 30 teams are playing a course of a season, right, which is not what would ever happen with this.
No.
But if you said, we're putting all these teams, and you're not having a triple-A team anymore, all you've got is this team, I think this team is the one that ends up in the total basement, even with, like, you know, they're gonna have pitching, as you said. The pitching here is solid, but you're not going to score a whole lot of runs here, and you're going to have a whole lot of problems. It's not great defense either. It's the lineup. I don't know if there's a worse lineup in this exercise.
It would be my thought. The Angels is worse, I think. You just have Daniel at the top and Rada. But Rada's also young and like projectable and not necessarily like I do think Baldwin is pretty good. He's a solid bat. I don't mind McCabe. I think McCabe can hit too, and I think Alvarez can hit. I think the edge with me and the Angels, like, we can talk about the lineup. You can give the lineup edge to the Angels if you want. It's the pitching.
Yeah.
Because they have relievers, and then they have, you know, two right-handers that haven't had, you know, major league time or anything like that. So, yeah, I kind of lean, I think, here. That I think
you could
honestly get, like, 12 innings this rotation for a start. Like, and that's not ridiculous to say. And they could get some quality, I think, with Shawver and Waldrop. They're gonna miss a lot of bats. It's all righty.
Okay, you've swayed me. Maybe they're 29th if all 30 teams
I think they're 29th. That's all I'm saying. Yes, 29th.
Woohoo. Okay, so you said you thought that there was a clear fourth here as well. Who do you think's fourth?
Yeah, I think Miami is four. This is another team that I built, another team that has notable pitching at the top. We could start there with Noble Meyer, Max Meyer, Thomas White, Carson Mildred Brandt. The issue with this pitching is you don't have a ton of upper level experience outside of Max Meyer. You know, you have two drafty guys and then another guy here at the back end who was a 2023 draft, a 2022 draftee that didn't have like a ton of success this season. And the lineup, you know, I don't think it's as bad as the two lineups we just talked about. You do have Kova up at the top, which is another young player that they just signed, like Perdomo. And then it's followed by Edwards, Victor Mesa, Troy Johnston, Jacob Berry, Jacob Amaya, Brock Vredenburg, Andres Valor, who's very young, and then Will Banfield, who's really just, you have him there as more a defensive catcher at this point.
He's a glove. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think with Edwards, Mesa, Johnston, even Berry and Amaya, you have like enough upper level minors experience, a couple guys who are good minor league hitters with Edwards and Johnston. And I think like Vredenburg isn't bad. You know, Amaya's had seasons where he's pretty good. So it's not an awful lineup, but it's starless. There's not anyone here that's like, oh, you know, there's no Wyatt Langford, there's no Junior Caminero, there's no carrying star that can take over a game or a series like you would with some of the other teams, I think.
Yeah, no, this lineup is still pretty thin, I would say. There is some versatility. There is some athleticism here, but at the same time, this is a bottom tier. If we're putting all 30 of these teams together, it's near the, I would say it's closer to the bottom. It may not be 29th like the Braves, but it's not
20 to 28. It's in there.
Yeah. It's in there. Okay. I do feel like that there's a different, we've now entered a different level of these NL East teams after that. The next one gets really tough. Who's third in this as we're working our way up? I'll kind of say that I think I'm probably going to lean Phillies as third, but Phillies and Mets are very close to me. And the reason I say Phillies third is I feel like that the Mets have a little bit more offense, a little bit more closer to the big league guys. That being said, they don't have McAble. I like Christian Scott, but I mean, they don't have that ace at the front. So,
yeah, you know what, though? I actually think you can argue that Scott would be more productive than McAble in a series like this. They were in the same league last year. We can look at the numbers and see what the production was. I think that Scott's the kind of guy that I think it's hard for us to adjust to in rankings. As an amateur pitcher in college, he wasn't a starter at Florida. He's changed some things, but he's also shown that he can handle some volume. And there's some traits and characteristics that are really interesting. And Abel is kind of like the way people used to describe as a jazz reference here. The nickname for Wayne Shorter, which was Mr. Gone. And the reason he was called that is some days he'd be the most unbelievable, like, saxophone player you'd ever seen in your life. And then there would be other days where, like, he would just not be feeling it. And it would just be like a low energy performance. And I kind of feel like it's that with Abel. It's like sometimes I've gotten Abel a lot over the last couple of years. I've seen him strike out 10 and go 6 and look phenomenal. And I've seen times where he can't land his secondaries and he's kind of sailing his fastball high. And you know, I think this Mets lineup is better. It's got more star power. I would argue that I think this top five is among the top 10 top fives. We could even go deeper and rank it, but I'd have to just break it down and look a little deeper. But I mean, like Jet Williams, followed by Drew Gilbert, followed by Kevin Parada, followed by Ryan Clifford, followed by Luis Angel Acuña. There's a bunch of guys there that can hit. There's impact. There's guys who get on base at a high clip. There's a little speed and athleticism. And even the bottom of their order, though young, in Raymer, Ramirez, Hawk, and Vargas, is not punchless at all. So I think that I would lean Philly 3 here. They're a younger lineup with Crawford, Miller, Rincones, Caba, Tite, you know, Walton. There's a lot of guys here that don't have a ton of upper minors experience. And I think when you're dealing with Abel, McGowan, Allegheri, Kirkring, there are some command woes potentially as well. That I would take this Mets lineup.
Tate's going to have a busy day or night with this team. You know, he's going to have to be very agile back there, and he's very young.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. And then, like, behind Scott, you have Blade Tidwell, who, you know, is kind of like Nick Abel, the college drafted version. Mike Vassell, who was good at points last year. And Brandon Sproat, who's got interesting stuff. And if that's your final guy, I think you could probably get, you know, eight innings out of the top three and then go to Sproat in the ninth.
So that makes perfect sense. And I do think, like I said, I thought the Mets, I look at the top of that lineup and go, okay, this is a lineup, especially if they're facing this Phillies team, they're working counts. They're getting guys on base, you know? And I think that puts them second.
They've also faced this. I think they've faced everybody in this rotation, maybe with the exception of Allegheri in Double A.
You may have seen them face most of the players in this rotation at some point.
I haven't seen those two teams play, but I've seen them play in consecutive series against the Fisher Cats.
But I do feel like that the Nationals are the clear one here. That being said, I don't want to make it sound like that this Nationals team runs away with the NL East here. Even though when you start Dylan Cruz, James Wood, and then we got Brady House, Yohandy Morales, Robert Hassel, like, okay, we're really rolling. Great top of the lineup. Incredible top of the lineup. And by the way, also some ranginess too, because Cruz in center, Wood can run, Hassel and left, you know, all that.
Nassim Nunez being short. Yeah, I mean.
Yeah. But that being said, we just talked about it. It's like, okay, that rotation, if we have them moving out, I don't like their chances of moving on after we get out of the East because of that rotation, where I just wish there was one guy you could hang your hat on and say, that guy has a chance to dominate today.
I don't think they do, and that's why I think in a one-game playoff, I think that they beat the Nationals. I think the Mets beat the Nationals. I think that the lineup, the bottom of the lineup might even be better for the Mets. And the pitching is a significant upgrade. This is a pretty rough pitching staff. Rutledge, Susana, Sakura, who I don't think he's in pitch professionally yet, and DJ Hers, like there's some 40 command. There's stuff, but there's 40 command. So they're going to have to get by in the strikeouts. That's for sure. So maybe it plays and these guys are in shorter stints. That might actually work with it. But like Susana to me is somebody like having watched him, like it's, he really struggles to command the baseball.
It's also going to rely on, okay, Dylan Cruz goes 3-for-4. James Woods hit two home runs and the Nationals. And, you know, Brady House ran into one. Elijah Green went 1-for-4 with 3 strikeouts and a 500-foot home run.
Yeah.
Type thing.
It could be the most exciting lineup. You know, I think that if we did like a group stage like the World Cup, you know, if the Mets and Nationals play in their last game, I think they would both be, you know, 2-0 going into that game. So,
yeah. So I do think, so you're saying your pick is Mets to come out of the East?
I think my pick is Mets to come out of the East. Yeah.
I see the logic. Again, I have it lined up a little differently, but I'm going to defer to you on this one because I do see your logic, which is ideally, this is what we love about this exercise. You need to have pitching and hitting, but also, and there is a value to close to the majors experience. If you look at this Mets lineup, I think that one of the things that stands out about it is you got a whole lot of guys who've at least reached Double A, and a guy who's reached Double A is just going to be able to generally string together better at bats. You know, a pitcher who's reached Double A is going to be able to have a little bit more consistency usually than the guy who's further away. Okay. Yeah. So,
and you got Clifford at first. And I think the other thing about this team is like they do have speed in the outfield with Acuna in left, Gilbert, and then Ramirez in center field. And they have two shortstops in Hawk and Williams on the left side of the infield. Not that there are 60 defenders over there or anything, but I think they're not 40s. You know, you're not rolling out a guy at third that can barely defend there, but you're placing him there because of the bat. So I think this order works a little bit. Yeah.
The other thing I'll say for them is we only did a lineup, right? We're not doing depth and all that. But there's a lot of positional versatility here as well, right? Like when you just said, like, if you needed to, Jet Williams, you can pop him out in the center field and talk about rangy and all that. Like you said, how can slide over short? Acuna's in left field, but you could bring him into the infield if you needed to, depending on the situation, depending on what you need to do.
Vargas has played third base as well, who's at second.
So, again, there is some versatility here. So that's our first surprise of this, which is our team coming out of the East. It's not the Nats. It's the New York Mets. So will we have surprises in the Central or the West? We'll find out right after this quick break. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. What I love about using Indeed is how it does a lot of that organizational work for me. I can sort through candidates. I can respond to them. I can schedule interviews all through Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses, including Baseball America, that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. And we're back. So, Jeff, we've gone through the NL East. The New York Mets have moved on. We do have a wild card, so we'll circle back. Maybe the Nationals make the wild card here. But and now we're – go ahead.
One thing we forgot to say, I think that the Nationals probably do come out of this if Cade Cavalli is healthy and if Jake Bennett's healthy, because that pushes down Susana to, like, their closer. And if he's coming in at one inning and has to throw smoke, okay.
Right. We're playing with the healthy guys who are healthy, and exactly. A guy like Cavalli not being healthy does really hurt them in the situation. Because that's a guy who has big, you know, that would be for these purposes, a very seasoned pitcher.
Yeah. And Bennett isn't exciting, but he's an out getter. And like guy like that is important in those middle innings, you know, especially if you can let Cavalli just air it out for three innings, you know.
As we dive into the NL Central, the first thing that stands out about this is the Central's better farm system-wise than the East is. When we talk about the East, and we talk about, okay, well, where are the Braves going to line up? Where do the where do the Marlins end up? Like, and you said, we have one that we're like, okay, maybe they're 29th. The other, we're like, they could be 28th. Maybe they're 20th, 21st at the best. I don't think that there's any team from the Central who's like a bottom third team. I think that the worst of these is not terrible as far as the lineup.
No, it's probably like we talked about the AL East and the AL show, and there's at least the Blue Jays, you know, and everybody in this, I think, has a claim for that wild card spot. I think that the Nationals were just eliminated when we started looking at the Central.
So basically with that, though, who would you say is your fifth? Who would be the team that fails to come out of this at all?
You know, I think for me, it's the Pirates, and it's not the pitching. It is a really good pitching staff. You have Paul Skeens, you got Bubba Chandler, you got Jared Jones, you got Anthony Solometo, who I think are three top 100 prospects. And then Solometo was like 102. I mean, he was in the conversation for that last spot on the list. So you got four potential top 100-ish type prospects, a true ace at the front of the rotation. Chandler's got big stuff. We saw what Jared Jones has done in major league games so far. And then you got this funky left-hander Salamero at the back end. So I really like the pitching. The hitting isn't awful. There's some defensive skills here. You got contact at the top with Chang, and Tamar Johnson's going to get on base and, you know, hit some balls hard. Brannigan, I think, is an underrated player and pretty solid defensively. Obviously, has a great arm, was a two-way player at Notre Dame. Forrester can hit. Nick Gonzalez has a ton of minors experience and, you know, can hit. You know that I like Matt Gorski. I think he's athletic. Trace Gonzalez isn't super exciting, but can get the bat and the ball and sort of spread it around the field. You know, Carter Binns, Lonnie White Jr., okay. The bottom of the order isn't super exciting there. There's no standout star here. I think Tamar is close. It would be nice if they had that secondary bat here. That it's funny, if they had gone another direction at that number one pick and taken Walker Jenkins, taken Wyatt Langford, taken Dylan Cruz, I think their pitching is still really good. Not as good, but still really good. And then they have that sort of second bat that I think makes this whole order look a little bit better. So this team, I think, could still finish second or third in the East pretty easily. But in the Central, I just don't think that compared to the other teams, they necessarily have what these other clubs have.
As you said, pitching staff wise, no complaints at all. But when you look at these lineups, the lineups we're getting ready to dive into, some of these lineups are really good. And that's where I think that the Pirates just don't have as much impact. And again, put them in the East. And we might be talking about them being in that top, near that top tier. Like, because if you compare them to the Phillies, I think they look pretty good. If you compare them even to the Nationals, I think if you said Nationals versus Pirates, I would say that the pitching of the Pirates gives them a shot.
Clearly, yeah, really. Because,
you know, but in this division, it's a lot tougher. And that's where they're, I think they are the fifth. Okay, so who's fourth for you?
So this is where it really does get pretty tricky. I'm going to go with four is the Cincinnati Reds. And I think part of my reason for picking Cincinnati is the pitching is solid. It's good. You have Lauder, Phillips, Petty, Floyd. There's no complaints there. The order is solid. Dunn, Jorge, Marte, Sal Stewart, Collier, Rodriguez, Arroyo, Burns, Herdebusi. The top of the order is pretty exciting. Dunn can do a lot of things. I think he's kind of a sneaky prospect generally. Jorge can obviously hit a little bit, gets, you know, make some contact, can do some things. Marte, I think, is a legitimate, you know, top 20 prospect now.
For the purposes of this, he's a stud because he's a big league. You know, he's reached the big leagues. There's ability to get on base, ability to hit for power, although less power than you would than you hope he will have eventually. But hits the ball really hard, doesn't lift as much ideally yet. But like you putting him three hole, he's one of the better hitters in a World Baseball Classic style tournament for this.
Yeah. And I think, you know, four, Sal Stewart can hit. And then you look at like Collier, who hits the ball hard. There's some good traits there, but we haven't seen the production yet. Still very young. Hector Rodriguez, who has hit, we've seen the production, but is incredibly aggressive. Arroyo, who's an aggressive hitter.
And Burns is just a glove. I mean,
he's a glove. And you're just getting more or less contact and speed out of.
Okay. So you say that. Let me compare that. Are you putting St. Louis as your three in this?
This might be rider bias here, JJ, because
I was going to say
Louis Cardinals. But I like this rotation more. Roby, Hence, Jerpy, Graceffo, minor league experience. I think there's different pitch styles coming at you, really interesting fastballs coming at you for the first three guys. And then Graceffo can really air it out. I like the lineup a lot. I think they're really strong up the middle with Scott and Wynn. And though Yvonne Herrera isn't a glove, he's a guy that's played in the major leagues and, you know, has some experience in the upper minors. Really good bat. I think the lineup, Scott at the top, you have an absolute weapon in terms of getting on base and speed, putting pressure on the defense. You have Wynn, who makes contact. He's got some power. He's also got speed behind him. And then you got one of the best pure hitters in the minors, I think, in Thomas Sejesi, top 100 prospect. Yvonne Herrera, good contact, really good on base ability. He's got power, but hasn't really gotten to the angles yet. But I think just as like kind of a data-driven four hitter that's going to like constantly drive in runs and like put pressure on hitters. And then you got some power behind it in Chase Davis at five, Juan Bincho, who can hit and has some power. William Sullivan, who I think is one of the biggest sleepers this offseason, that the feedback I got on Sullivan that was great didn't even happen until the chapter for the top 30 was turned in. So he was 31 with a bullet. I think he's somebody that's going to move up our boards pretty quick. He's got great underlying skills and in the offseason workouts was like 115 exit velocities at will. And they're making some adjustments and they've done well with hitters. Leo Bernal, who can hit a little bit, gives you some backup catching, I guess, too. And then Cesar Prieto, who's, you know, an experienced, successful minor league hitter up to this point. That's your nine hitter. I just think it's a really solid lineup, and you have really strong defense up the middle here with Scott and Wynn.
I will agree with you, but at the same time, I will say I do feel like that this lineup is fine, but it's also not spectacular. Like I feel like it's a clear three. And when it comes to this 3-4, I think these are very close. And I would say that partly because you are right. Like when you talk about Roby and Hentz, these are guys who are a little bit more known quantities as pro pitchers than like a Rhett Lauder or, you know, a Ty Floyd who, I mean, are truly, I think Rhett Lauder made his first official pro appearance in a spring training game just recently. Neither of those guys pitched last year in any official game after signing. So they're a little bit of an unknown quantity. But that said, I feel really good about Rhett Lauder's chances to be a fast to the majors starter. I don't know if there's actually a whole lot of difference there. Like as far as on the pitching side. And I do think that when you get to the middle of this lineup, I do feel like Blake Dunn, like you talked about Victor Scott, right? And I agree, Victor Scott is a great type of leadoff hitter. Yep. Blake Dunn may get hit by three pitches, especially if he's got some of these guys throwing to him. He may get three HBPs that get him on in the game because he's Mr. Pincushion in addition to hitting for power. And he swiped 50 bags last year as well. And then you have, you know, like guys like you said, Hector Rodriguez, it's going to swing at everything. And at some point, I do think that will come back to haunt him. He can rightfully say to me, though, show me where. I've done it in winter ball. I've done it at every level that I've ever gone to. And I have really unique bat-to-ball skills, maybe, to make it work. And then you have kind of like the Sal Stewarts, the Cam Colliers in the middle of the lineup as well, where I do think that this is what I love about the Central here. Is, and I hope to be actually seeing, I'm scheduled right now to see, your like feature game, I would say, is you're going to be at the Prospect Showdown for Orioles Pirates.
Yeah.
Which is probably, I mean, that I would say that probably is going to be billed as the main event. Is that,
I think,
so. Fair?
Yeah, because the other matchups I don't think can compare to this in terms of just star power. Both sides potentially. Like the Yankees will be really good, but the Blue Jays will maybe only have a few guys that are of great interest.
My version of that is I will, you know, I am planned to be at Reds Rangers, which will be very fun because of what we just talked about with this Reds team. But we also talked about Evan Carter, Wyatt Langford, Giddy. Again, if everyone plays. Now, that Rangers, let's just be clear. The Rangers may say Evan Carter's a big leaguer. Wyatt Langford's competing for a big league job. We're not going to include him in this game. Yeah. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, okay, it's good to see Sebastian Walcott. This is nice, you know, like, okay. But not what I was hoping for. You never know with these things. But we'll know next week, hopefully. But I do think that the Central is a crazy division where the team we list fifth, you know, especially team we list fourth, could easily win this. But I will go with you on those two. But I do think two are even better.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this was a battle of a system that's near and dear to your heart and a system that's near and dear to my heart.
Let me say this.
You rated the St. Louis system higher, so I think that's the difference. Yeah.
Let me say this. Can you imagine how fun the Reds team would have been for this if this event had started last year? Because then it would have been, well, you could just say, well, what would it have been? It's like, well, just look at the Reds big league team, because it would have been Ellie, you know, and it would have been McLean, and it would have been Steer, and it would have been Encarnacion Strand, and it would have been, like, we just could, yeah, you know, it would have been the guys that are on the big league club now.
I think they
Blake Don wouldn't have been there, but yeah.
I think, and then you also, you know, you also had Andrew Abbott, like, right? Like, I think they win it. I think the team that wins it is Cincinnati in 2023, if we did the same exercise.
Okay. Now this is where it gets really tough because we've got the Cubs and the Brewers left. And let's talk it through before we pick who we think is one and two here. I'll start with the Brewers. Okay. So the case for the Brewers, well, let's just start with, they do have Jackson Churia. So we've got a superstar prospect to hang your hat on. But in addition to him, right, you say, okay, well, that's nice. But then they've got guys like Tyler Black, and they've got Jefferson Cuero and Joey Ortiz, recent addition, you know, so which gives you great defense up the middle. And you've also got a guy like a Brock Wilkin, who's having a very good spring and is kind of like that professional hitter type. Wes Clark fits that professional hitter type as well. There's a nice mix there. But if that was it, I would say, well, Cubs run away with it. But then you say, okay, so who's going to pitch? And you go, okay, Mizorowski, Gasser, Hall, DL Hall, Carlos Rodriguez. And you say, whew, because again, that is a beautiful mix of, on the right day, Mizorowski could be like, Mizorowski faced 9 batters. He retired all 9. He struck out 7. And you go, you know, that was as good as it gets. Gasser is not that, but Gasser's as big league ready as almost any pitcher who's going to be in the series. He had a full year last year at AAA, really knows how to pitch with solid stuff. And then, oh yeah, by the way, you've got DL Hall, who's looked really good so far in the spring, but like is also truly lights out stuff on his good days. I mean, this is a fun lineup in rotation.
Very, very fun lineup in rotation. Sure. I don't even think you can argue with that.
But
you know, you start out with you know, one of the best prospects in baseball and Churio in your lineup. That puts you in a pretty good spot, right? But they have him, you have him too. Tyler Black leading off, who's an excellent hitter. You got power in Brock Wilkin, Clark's got some power. Jefferson Quero is aggressive, but does have contact and power skills that are interesting. Joey Ortiz, we know, has hit. Oliver Dunn has hit in the minors. Louis Laura, though young, has a lot of contact and on-base ability. And Yofri Rodriguez is one of the best young prospects in the game. So it's an exciting lineup. And then, like you said, you bring in the pitching, and you got Mizorowski, Gasser, DL Hall, all top 100 type pitchers. Certainly, you know, Mizorowski squarely in that top 100. And then Carlos Rodriguez, who's got a bunch of really good starter traits, and if I remember correctly, was pretty successful in the actual WBC, right?
I'm not going to look that up at this moment, but I think that is true. Okay, but now I'm going to tee you up to talk about why that might not be the best team in this division, because then we've got the Cubs, and whew, I feel like that this is the team that could potentially win it all.
Yeah, so I'm not going to say what my pick is yet, but yes, I think that this is the team that's going to win the National League. This is a phenomenal, phenomenal lineup. You start with PCA up top. We know he can hit in the minors.
Okay, 80 glove.
Incredible, you know, glove. right, up the middle defense. You got Matt Shaw, who's got contact. He's got some speed. He's got power as well. We saw that he can play a few different positions in the infield. He's played second base. He played mostly shortstop in college. He played mostly third base this offseason with a potential opportunity to come up and be their third baseman sometime this summer. You have Owen Casey, who went 3-for-3 in the major league game with two doubles yesterday. Matt Mervis.
Massive power. Yeah, massive power in Casey.
Massive power. Some of the biggest in the minors. We have Matt Mervis, who has big power and has been a really successful minor league hitter. We have Kevin Alcantara, who's a 60 center fielder, and he's your left fielder. And he's got power. He's got twitch. He can hit. I think he's a guy that's probably going to move into our top 100 list. I think he's one of our personal, maybe our biggest misses. I love Alcantara. I think he's really, really exciting. And then you got Canario, who I think prior to get hurt had 36 home runs in the prior season in the minor leagues. Is one of the best power hitters in the minor leagues, upper level minors experience. Moises Ballesteros, who's an excellent hitter. For the defense, could be a little bit of a question there. Jefferson Rojas, who had a double in the major league game off of Jalen Beeks yesterday, and looks really, really good. And
who you are having such fun watching him play yesterday.
Yeah, on the plane, I was flying here watching that Rockies Cubs game, and like he came in and like ropes the double, and I'm like, all right. Like to the wall. And then BJ Murray, who's a really good hitter and a switch hitter. So it's like an interesting lineup configuration and how that all comes together. It really doesn't let up. And then you go to
We get the rotation.
Yeah. And Cade Horton to Jacob Mizorowski. Horton has more starter qualities than Mizorowski does. They both have great stuff. Kind of similar in that regard. I think that I give the edge at the two spot. To Milwaukee. I prefer Gasser to Ben Brown, just in terms of command. Though Ben Brown has unbelievable stuff. Gasser's coming out here as a lefty after Mizorowski and throwing like the kitchen sink at you with like five or six different pitch shapes. Jordan Wicks, you can kind of offset Gasser a little bit with Jordan Wicks. So
they're the guys to compare, I would say.
Who's had major league experience. I would take him, I think, in a series like this over DL Hall right now, as much as I like
him. I would not.
I would think in a year that might change. You're probably right, though. Maybe we'll give the edge to Hall there. I do think the pitching's better for the Brewers. And then you have Luke Little coming in as your closer.
Which, take your pick as who's your closer. Like, Little throws hard, but you could pick some other options there, too.
Yeah, but if that's your closer, I think that's fine. He was pretty good last year as a reliever. So, yeah, I mean, the pitching is the biggest question mark here, but the lineup is just so, like, unrelenting that I don't know if I could pick the Brewers over them, though I think it would be a bad
This is my one.
Yeah, it's mine.
I mean, again, this Brewers, I will tell you right now, I don't want to foreshadow too much, but we said, will the Nationals come out of the wild card? No. Like, I think that this Brewers team, houses the number two team in the East. I mean, it's just it's a deeper lineup. It's got as much star power. It's got a better pitching staff by far. Like, as we said, I think that the 3 and 4 teams in the Central could give a good run to the best in the East. But man, the top of this Central, we talk about how weak the Central's been in a lot of years. I'll give credit here. On a prospect team side, it's pretty interesting and it's pretty strong. So we're now 2/3 of the way done with our National League look. That means that we've got one more to go. One more division to go, which is the NL West. And before we dive into this, we just say, okay, so clearly the Dodgers advance out because the Dodgers win the NL West every year. Pretty much, I mean, every year. But obviously it's the prospect team, so maybe that's not the case. But as you look at, we're going to go again from the bottom up, as you look at your NL West teams, I'll kind of preface it by saying, is San Francisco the clear five here?
Their pitching is better than the Rockies, that's for sure. I don't like the lineup nearly as much as I love Bryce Eldridge and Walker Martin. I think this is actually a really athletic lineup. I just don't know if they're there yet. The pitching is way better, though. You got Harris on the top, Wisenhunt behind them, Birdsong, and then Crawford as your closer with Reggie's airing it out for an inning with that breaking ball on the heater. I like their chances. So this is a tough one for me because I think you can make a case that it is Colorado. That's five. Because
talk about them a little bit.
Pitching prospects got injured. So it's Dolander, who hasn't pitched in the big leagues yet, but did pitch in the
I mean, not big leagues, hasn't pitched in pro ball yet.
Palmquist, who I really like, is like a left-hander who's got pitchability and some interesting shapes. Sean Sullivan's kind of the same deal. Michael Prosecki's another left-hander. So they're going to beat up on left-handed heavy lineups. So I guess that's kind of an advantage with their pitching. And all of these guys can pitch. Palmquist and Prosecki were pretty good last year in the minors. And Sullivan is a lot like Cooper Jerpy. So, you know, I don't dislike that. It was good with Wake Forest. So I think I lean Colorado just because the lineup is better. But there are some bright spots still in the San Francisco one. This division's better than the East, too. So this is another one where it's like, oh, it's a little tough. But I think I give the Eds just in the lineup because there's some guys who wouldn't sniff the lineup for Colorado that are in the lineup for the Giants.
That's where I think I just look at the lineups and I say, as much as I will agree with you that the pitching gives the edge to the Giants, I just look at the Rockies lineup and say, there's a nice mix here of athleticism, defense, guys who, I mean, some real thump in the middle of this lineup.
Real thump.
That's where I've got the Rockies four and the Giants five, because I like their up the middle defense here, especially having a guy like Drew Romo, having, you know, they're again, there's a nice mix of bats. Yeah, Jorge, you know, like, yeah. I like all that. And I will say, like, as bad as, again, this is the weakest pitching staff probably of the five in the West, but Dolander is a guy who, there's an unknown factor here, right? At his best, he's really good. And he wasn't always at his best last year at Tennessee, but at his best, he could dominate in a game like this as well.
Yeah, his upside, just purely on ability and what we saw as a sophomore, is probably higher than Rhett Lauder's is. He just doesn't have the pitchability and intangibles that make Lauder, you know, such a sure shot rotation arm, right? So that's kind of the big difference. And I think that, like, with pitching in the Rockies, that there's just a perception generally, but they've targeted better arms recently. Like, I do think that, like, Sullivan, Palmquist, Prosecki are interesting and could fit major league roles. The big thing with this team, though, is the lineup. You have Adel Amador, who's, from a pure contact and on-base ability, there aren't many better prospects than Amador. It's one of the best hit tools in the minors. He's followed by Sterling Thompson, who's another guy who's an above-average to plus hit guy. The question there is you have to put him at third, and he's not great. But with the other guys around him, I think they can cover some of that range. Jordan Beck, who can thump and get on base. Yankiel Hernandez, who, though he struggled at double A, I mean, he was 20, 21. So we have to think about how young he was for league and context. And there's huge power there. Hunter Goodman, who's been, I think, the minor league home run leader over the last two seasons. I think he's hit 70 home runs over the last 2 years in the minors. Zach Veen, when healthy, can be a really good player. Guy that can run, get on base, can hit a little bit. You're not asking for as much power here in the six hole. Robert Kalaz, who's one of the most physically advanced teenagers that's going to come over here stateside this year. There's even a chance that he's advanced enough that he could skip the complex and end up in full season. There's big pop there, great angles. He'll probably swing and miss a little bit about against more advanced pitching, but against, like, your seven lineup, there's a lot of upside there with a guy like that. Drew Romo in the second half of last year really came into his own as a hitter, started to hit for more power. Sometimes it takes switch hitters a little bit longer. He's always had decent contact. The approach got a little bit better. You know, we know how strong he is defensively. And Dion Jorge is athletic and can, you know, make contact and get the ball in play. He's kind of like a old school Tony La Russa number nine hitter that can run a little bit. He's defensive and, you know, not awful. So I think this is a really good lineup from one to nine. And as you said, up the middle, when you have Romo, Jorge, and then even Beck, who's best in right field but can't play some center, I think they're pretty solid there.
Okay, so do you end up having Giants 5, Rockies 4 when it's all said
and done? Yes, yeah. Rockies 4, Giants 5.
Okay, so who's 3?
I think, you know, this...
I think it's the Padres. I'll kind of...
Okay, so tell me why you think it's the Padres.
Okay. Without trying to give away too much, but let's compare the Padres and the Diamondbacks. I think the Diamondbacks have a very good... I mean, this is a solid team here, right? Like, I feel like I give the Padres utter credit. The Padres should not be here, right? They've traded two full farm systems of prospects over the last like 3 or 4 years, but they just keep finding more guys, right? Like, you look at the top of this lineup and you've got guys like Ethan Salas, who's one of the best prospects in the game. You've got Jackson Merrill. You've got a nice blend of other guys who are like, okay, they're not elite prospects, but they're probably good in a series like this. A Graham Pauly, a Jacob. Yeah, Jacob Marcy, you know, guys like that. They've got a rotation like Robbie Snelling, Drew Thorpe, Dylan Lesko. Like, hey, Jairo Iriarte to air it out. Like, all of this is good. But that said, like, if I look at the Arizona lineup, I feel like the Arizona has a really good lineup as well. And I feel like, I mean, this is tough because I think Arizona also, the pitching is not as good as San Diego's. Clearly you think that San Diego's 2. So why do you think Arizona's 3?
Because I love this rotation. I mean, this is one of the better rotations you're rolling out there. Robbie Snelling was our minor league pitcher of the year. Drew Thorpe was a candidate for minor league pitcher of the year. I think it might actually come down to those two.
Yeah, I think it did. Yeah.
Dylan Lesko is your 3. My goodness. I mean, you're throwing a guy out here who's some of the best stuff in the minors. And this could be a guy that healthy skyrockets now, like in a full off season coming off of Tommy John surgery. We could see the Dylan Lesko that everyone talked about as one of the best amateur pitchers they had seen at the high school level. And that includes guys like Jobe and Painter within his vicinity. So it says a lot to me. And then Jairo Iriarte, who is really good, can start, but for 2 innings as a reliever, Iriarte is nasty, like as nasty as you're going to see here. I also think, like, there's nobody in the Padres lineup who really can't hit. Head Solace.
And you could, okay, you're convincing me because there may be guys in that Arizona lineup that we can't say for sure yet can hit.
That's the big thing to me. And Arizona is also much less experienced. You know, you have guys like Gruver, Luis, Jones doesn't have a lot of experience. Tommy Troy, who's really good. Like, I think that the 2-3-4 here is what's carrying.
That's what I was probably weighting too heavily. But Tommy Troy, Jordan Lawler, Yvonne Melendez is a really good, hey, let's feast type, you know, like we're going to put together some big innings type of middle of that lineup. But you are right. Around it, it's not what San Diego has. They don't have as many of those close to the majors. Yeah. He's a good prospect, not great.
And Paulie's have been a more productive minor league hitter than Ivan Melendez. As much as I like Melendez, he's got crazy outlier power. You know, he still hits for some power and gets on base. There's good contact. And Marseille is kind of an interesting player. Martorell is an interesting player. They're going to work some counts in the middle of this lineup too. Even Zavala is a guy that walks a lot, though he misses. Swings and misses. He's got power. Igwe's Rosario hits enough. And I don't know a whole ton about Rosman Verdugo. So that's the one question mark for me there.
So, okay. So we're going to say San Diego 2, Arizona 3. If you're listening to this, I think you then know who's our number one for this because you know what teams are in the NL West. So the Dodgers do look like our one. And I would say that I would start with, I'm not surprised at all by that, considering the Dodgers player development juggernaut. But also on top of that, I'm not surprised about that at all because of just the amazing things we heard about that Tulsa rotation last year. And when you start with, well, what's your pitching staff here? Your pitching staff is kind of starts with what the guys who were in that Tulsa rotation. And then you say, oh, yeah, by the way, and that lineup is just loaded as well.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those situations where art sort of imitates life, where the Dodgers just edge out those pesky Padres, and you know the Padres fans are once again looking gloomy at this as well.
Dodgers fans would say, edge? We don't edge. You know, yeah, we usually win this by the division by.
Dude, I might actually take the Padres rotation over the Dodgers. I don't know if that's crazy or not.
I mean, I think that they're similar. I will give you that because, now, again, as you said, Snelling
versus Stone, I think I take Snelling. Hurt versus Thorpe in a tournament like this. Like, I like Kyle Hurt a lot. I don't know if Kyle Hurt has the Drew Thorpe starter traits that Thorpe has, though his stuff is better.
I love River Ryan.
I think I would take him in a tournament like this over Lesko, but, like, we don't know. Maybe we're getting the breakout Lesko. You know, maybe this is 2023 Jackson Jobe. You know, that's what I'm trying to figure out. And I think I would take Arriarte over Vanasco. I don't think that's saying anything outrageous.
But okay, the lineup. Dallas gets
yeah.
Go take us through this lineup and why we would have them won.
Sure. You have DePaula at the top, who can hit and get on base. One of the best young hitters just got actually added to our top 100 list. So he's a top 100 guy. Dalton Rushing, who we know can hit, one of the most exciting minor league hitters, particularly at the catching position. Diego Cartaya, who hasn't been as good as we thought, but can still hit enough. He's got some thump. You have Andy Pajes, who's looked really good in the major league games this offseason. And I think is in most organizations is probably breaking camp. Lorenzo at first base, who's got crazy power. Trey Sweeney, who can hit enough and can play some decent defense, especially at second base. Joendry Vargas, who's one of the most exciting complex level players out there. Jake Geloff, who's fine, you know, can hit a little bit, has some, you know, big conference experience in college and has hit there. And Kendall George, who's really exciting and speedy at the bottom of the lineup. So it's just a really good lineup with a lot of upside. So I think that's where the edge is, clearly.
I think so too. But at the same time,
Jackson Merrill is better than anyone in this lineup.
At the same time, this is where it gets interesting is So let's say the Dodgers move on as our one. Now, this is probably one of the toughest is we say, okay, so one wild card makes it out of this. I would say that our wild card is between San Diego. So, let's just put them out there. I don't want to prejudge. So we got San Diego from the West. We've got Milwaukee from the Central. And we've got the Nationals from the East. I think we take the Nationals and throw them to the side right away because of the pitching. Fair?
Yes.
Okay. San Diego versus Milwaukee. Who's your wild card?
I'm taking Milwaukee. You got more impact bats, and I think the pitching maybe isn't better than San Diego, but it stacks up with it pretty nicely. You got that Gasser to offset the Thorpe, you know, starter trait type of guy. Hall versus Lesko, more upper minors experience, has a ton of great stuff, deep arsenal of pitches. You know, I think I'm going with the Brewers here. I think it's clearly the Brewers.
Okay. So our playoffs from the National League, we have the Brewers as the wild card. We have the Dodgers coming out of the West. We have the Cubs coming out of the Central. And we have the Mets coming out of the East, right? Mm-hmm. So, okay. The crazy part of this is who's your first out of those? I think it's the Mets.
I think it's the Mets too. The Mets are the first out. And then who's your second out?
Okay. So I can't.
It's hypothetical. So they all, we don't have to think about this getting seeded or anything like that. Like,
I obviously can't take the Padres to go over the, you know, like.
What do you mean the Dodgers?
Wait, I'm sorry. We got the Dodgers, we got the Brewers, we got the Cubs. I can't take the Brewers over the Cubs because I just said that I would take the Cubs over the Brewers. So, and I think, though, if you said Brewers versus Dodgers.
Yeah.
Whew. That's tough. That's tough.
I think I lean Brewers a little bit.
I think I do, too.
And you got the better star in Jackson Chourio. You know, I think you have potentially better secondary stars as well. And guys like Black, who have really hit in the minor leagues, Joey Ortiz, they're pretty good defensively up the middle too. And I mean, defensively up the middle, they got Quero, Ortiz, and Chourio.
Well, and,
you know,
yeah. And then that's really good.
Maybe better than the Dodgers.
And their pitching is experience for this purpose. You know, yep. You have D.L. Hall was pitching in the playoffs for the Orioles last year. So, like, that's a guy with big league experience. Mizorowski's a little bit less experienced, but he's not a guy who's got no experience in the minors. And then Gasser is about as experienced and savvy with solid stuff as anyone in this exercise. Yeah. So I think, unfortunately, that makes it kind of anticlimactic, because if we have the Brewers as the second best team, so they face the Cubs, I'm not saying they could absolutely beat the Cubs in one game or in a series, but I think we have to pick the Cubs as our team to come out of the National League, because we already picked them to beat the Brewers.
Yeah, I think the Cubs are the team that's coming out of the National League, so we have our prospect World Series set, Cubs versus Orioles.
So who do you have, Jeff?
This is,
well, we have to give a little bit of background. If for the crazy person out there who's only listening to this one and not listening to the AL one, what is the strength of the Orioles?
The Orioles' strength is obviously this lineup. And we saw this this lineup more or less when it's a point that you made. That was a great point in our AL show. This was the team that won the AAA championship. They beat the PCL team. This is, for all intents and purposes, the best minor league team of last year. They're at the highest level, and they won the championship. So, you know, you're going down a lineup. It's Holiday, Kowser, Mayo, Kerstad, Norby, Stowers, Fabian, Ardoin, because Basayo is an
yes, right.
injured, and then Enrique Bradfield at nine. It's a great lineup. Solid pitching. It's not outstanding with Povich, McDermott, Bowmeister, Johnson. I think it's a bunch of like number threes in this tournament or number twos, right? They have like that depth, but not necessarily a bunch of standouts. And then like we went through the Cubs lineup. We know the Cubs are one of the few teams that can match some of the firepower of the Orioles. The top of the order is not as good as the Orioles. It's not as experienced.
No one's is.
The bottom of this order with Canario, Ballesteros, Rojas, and BJ Murray, I think I like more than Stowers, Fabian, Ardoin, and Bradfield. Bradfield's really the only guy there that's an offensive player I'm excited about. And I think I take Horton over Povich.
Yes, 100%.
I think Brown versus McDermott is a push.
Yep.
I would take the guy, though I like Bowmeister's style more than I like Wicks. Wicks is a guy that's pitched in the major leagues, right? I'm going to take Wicks over Bowmeister. And then it's Seth Johnson versus Little. I would take Seth Johnson, but Seth Johnson's coming off of an injury.
Mm-hmm.
We're not so sure what the command's like. Little's another guy that's been in the major leagues. It's closer to a push than not. This is tough. Like, see, I could.
Can I add something? Which there's a fascinating component to this too, in that we have here the cores of two championship teams. Your Southern League champions are largely what we're talking about here with the Cubs. That Tennessee Smokies team won the Southern League last year. This Orioles team is largely the core of what won the International League in AAA last year and then won the AAA National Championship. Now, let me just say, the Cubs can rightfully say, we don't get to do a double-A national championship. We'd have won that too, probably. So, but you have two teams here who have shown they can win on the field because both of them have.
Yeah. So where are you going for your choice, Orioles or Cubs here?
I think that I have to, at the end of it, go to the Orioles, largely because they have a little bit more experience to go with all this talent. But that said, I would describe this, if they were playing a three-game series or a one-game series, it's 53-47, 55-45 max. Not, oh, this is a runaway. As good as that Orioles lineup is, I do think the Cubs have better pitching. And the Cubs lineup is so good that it's not like something where you look at this and say, oh, this Orioles lineup is in a different area code than the Cubs lineup. This Cubs lineup's really good. Yeah. And if we had this hypothetical 140, we'll call it minor league, so 140 game season where all these teams played, I do think that these two would end up being the two who make it to the end. And I think, yeah, again, they're very close. But so I would say Orioles then over Cubs. What about you?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Orioles over Cubs. And I think there's just more firepower in the lineup. The trade-off with pitching isn't that much of a downgrade. They are guys that have had, at least two of them here at the top, have had upper minors level experience. Bullmeister's probably your weak spot here. And I think that they're better defensively than the Cubs are. You know, they're better behind the plate than the Cubs are. PCA is an 80 defender in center field. Enrique Bradfield's what, a 70, and then you
have, it's not a big difference there. Yeah.
Yeah. Judd Fabian and Kowser next to him, who are two guys that can play center. It's a solid defensive infield. And I just think that's where they get the edge over the Cubs, where you're a little bit younger with Rojas at shortstop. The corners, Alcantara and Casey are very solid. You know, Alcantara, we talked about how good he is defensively, but that's not three center fielders. That's kind of two. And then in the infield a little bit, like Shaw is good defensively. We'll see with BJ Murray at third. You know, behind the plate kind of gives me a little concern with Ballesteros versus Arduin, who's really just there as a defensive catcher. It's really close.
Let me ask you this. If Masaya was healthy, would it change?
It's easily the Orioles. If Masaya's healthy. Yeah. I think if Masaya's healthy, it's easily the Orioles.
Whereas with the Cubs, I don't think there's no one we're looking and saying if they just had this. Now, the other thing I would say with the Orioles is this made their big league team better. But if you added DL Hall and Joey Ortiz to this team,
sure.
I also would say, okay, it's a slam dunk.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. They don't have the Cade Horton at the front, but Cade Povich was also, they have another Cade. They have their own Cade. So the left-handed Cade. So there you go.
I love this exercise.
And
the most fun part of it is that we get to talk about it now. And now in 2 weeks from now, we get to see it, or at least some version of it, because we're going to be at games.
And we'll see how close our dream lineups were to what they actually end up putting out next week.
It's awesome to see. So we hope you enjoyed this as much as we did kind of putting it together. Feel free to, we're having post about this up at baseballamerica.com. Or if you want to, feel free to email me with your thoughts, jjcooper@baseballamerica.com. Easy enough. I would love to hear what you think about where we got this wrong, where we got this right, make the case for, we want to hear what you have to think. That's a perfect way to kind of wrap this up. You can check out, again, we have all of these lineups over at baseballamerica.com. For Jeff, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.